Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is episode 175, and we're going to talk about a movie from 2016 called The Women's Balcony, which was absolutely terrific.
Oh, good.
Yes. Really love this movie. It's Hebrew, right? Israeli.
What's Israeli?
Yeah. Takes place in Jerusalem. So yeah, what is this movie and how did you come across it?
I just read a review of it somewhere.
Oh, cool.
And the reviews I read all just loved it. And it was a blockbuster in Israel. Although surprisingly there, the critics all were like, oh, so schmaltzy, oh, so obvious. Well, the crowds were loving it, right? Mm. And then they just said, wow, it's so specific to Israel and the issues we struggle with that we just don't know how it'll travel. And I mean, people loved it in America and various other countries. So with that preface, it is in a foreign language, but basically it's about a small religious community that seem to be strict, but not so strict that they're restricting themselves out of everything. They're kind of hitting that middle ground, I think. And what you see really is, at the beginning, the joy of the community and how well they all get along and how they manage everything. And their synagogue has a women's balcony. So they sit above, the guys sit below. And when it opens up, they're getting ready for the bar mitzvah of a couple's grandson. And in the middle of this, the women's balcony collapses. The rabbi's wife is seriously hurt. She goes to the hospital, and everybody else is left grieving over this problem and also thinking, what are we going to do? For one thing, you have to have a mishvah, I think is how it's said. You have to have 10 people in order to have prayer for it to be right for the Jewish guys. So they're standing there going, anybody want to pray? Anybody want to pray? And some people are like, oh, I can't. They all understand the plea. And a young man comes in who says, oh, I'll gladly pray with you and I'll bring some of my students from the seminary. So they join up with him. In the meantime, the women are thinking about how do we restore the women's balcony and what do we do in the meantime? And the young man brings in a perspective that these people have not had, a very kind of a strict perspective, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And the rabbi, in the meantime, is so devastated by what happened to his wife that he's essentially withdrawn into himself and can't seem to handle the shock. So this is the situation everyone's left with. I don't know how much more I should say.
No, that's great. That's really good. Okay. Yeah, I'd stop there.
Well, and I guess what I would say is because it's looking at the women's balcony, which they want back, unlike in America or a more progressive, I guess you would say, Jewish synagogue, they want their balcony. And so you start to see these rifts happening between married couples, between friends, between genders.
Yeah, yeah. So you're saying that in an American synagogue, a typical one anyway, the men and women sit together, right?
Right.
Okay, yeah.
And I think
there's a lot I don't know about Jewish traditions, so yeah, that was a genuine question.
No. Yeah. And I think in a lot of Jewish ones also, they would do the same thing. I think this is kind of showing that this is a more strict community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's well put. And I just loved it. It's in some ways a comedy. You know, I guess, would you call it a comedy? I guess you would.
Oh, yeah.
But it's really upbeat and happy most of the time. I mean, I felt really good, especially at the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I felt good pretty much throughout. It was uplifting. That's the word I'm searching for.
Yeah, because it celebrates, as you said, community, mm-hmm. friendship. And, of course, if that's all it did, it would be pretty boring. So what you're seeing, too, is how these people are struggling through their problems, while at the same time there are enough happy or upbeat elements that, you know, you don't feel dragged down. And in a way, it made me think very peripherally of, and kind of in a way, of course, like Ushpizin, which we watched, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which was about serious things, but handled it in a light manner. And then also about, like, kind of like My Big Fat Greek Wedding,
mm-hmm. yeah,
where that's a lot lighter, but it's still looking at culture. How do you deal with being in a culture that's very different when you're in America, which is not like your culture? How do you bridge that gap when you find somebody you want to marry who's very different? And, you know, that's all played for laughs. This, some of it is more serious, mm-hmm. but it never drags you down, I think.
Yeah, yeah. What was the name of that movie? I'm just searching through that list. The movie from India that we watched about the wedding?
Monsoon Wedding.
That's it, Wedding. It felt a little like that to me. You know, a pretty big cast, lots of people, very deftly handled by the director. Mm-hmm. Just really well done, you know, that kind of stuff. The crowd scenes, you know, where you've got a lot of people together, like the opening.
Yeah, and it was nicely shot, too. I mean, like, there's one scene where it's raining and the women are all coming out to go to something. And they show them popping out of the door and each one's umbrella opening over their heads. Hmm. And so you can see all the umbrellas and they all are very different. They're all designed, some brightly, some intricately, some more quiet. So they're all reflecting the people, but they're all together and they're all umbrellas and they're all going down the street together as they go off to their synagogue. And so it's a wonderful little shot. And there's some shots like that that really capture
the
essence of the moment.
The opening shot, too. It's it's cool how they did that. You know, you just see a door and a stairway, which is what they do at the end, if I remember right, as well. Yeah. But then all of the whole community comes out of the doors, you know, they're all their houses and they're all headed to the synagogue. And it's mm-hmm. like, you'd think it was a major holiday. It's the Sabbath, right? I don't know that it was a major holiday, was it?
Well, no, they were heading to the grandson's bar mitzvah.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay. So it was out of the ordinary. But yeah, they definitely loved each other quite a bit. It was mm-hmm. they really enjoyed each other's company and lots of laughter, lots of happiness. And
they were tolerating each other's quirks that could have been maddening if you'd let them be. Like the one lady who starts eating the stuff that gets brought for the communal meal later.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, why are you going to eat all this? Oh, it's so good. I can't help it. I'm like, oh, well, whatever's left, put it on the table. You know, just kind of.
Yeah.
And the little ways that they would work with the problems like these. And this also signals they're more orthodox, that they won't turn on lights during the Sabbath. If the lights go out, they have to get a Sabbath Gentile to come and fix their fuses, sort of thing. And that's a thing. And you may know that or may not.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard from people who go to the Holy Land, like you can't push an elevator button on Sunday. So you have to wait if you're in a hotel for someone mm-hmm. to come. Can you push two for me?
Yeah. So it's Saturday, I think. For them.
You're right. The Sabbath is Friday to Saturday.
Yeah,
and so
I know a little bit about it, but you're not allowed to have, if I understand right, you're not allowed to have anyone give you service. You know,
I don't know if that's true. That's what the guy says in there, but they are all doing it.
Okay. That's what I thought the rule was.
Well, I do just know that when people that I know who went to the Holy Land were in a hotel, they were in the hotel and people come rushing in and go, oh, good. Can you push five for me? So whether that's actually the rule and they're not following it.
That is interesting. Yeah, you say that. So having a Gentile come do that for them is mm-hmm. them having service done.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking of.
Fascinating. Yeah.
Well, and so that's the example for that and how they'll kind of just deal with things is they're kind of living, I think, the spirit of the law more than the letter of the law. So when the little boy is flipping the coffee pot switch off mm-hmm. and on or the hot water switch off and on and he stops and it's off and the lady's like, so you probably should flip that again. And he's like, no, because he got caught.
Yeah.
And he's like, but how are we going to have tea? And he's like, so he runs off and she's like, just kind of reaches over and flips it on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's that I'm doing the best I can, but this is practical.
Right.
And the whole movie is looking at that. When should you be super orthodox? When should you have that middle ground?
Yeah, and that's the tension, isn't it? That's the tension, you know, that I think that strikes a chord with so many different cultures. I think that was the reason why it was so well received elsewhere, because we all understand that.
Mm-hmm. You know,
we all experience that.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was looking around at some interviews with the person who wrote it, who's the ex-wife of the director. And she was saying she grew up in a community like that. And then that Israel had kind of had a lot of, you don't want to call them holy wars, but, you know, battles between congregations over how strict are you, how middling ground, how progressive are you. And she goes, and in the U.S., this is a hot button now. And I'm thinking, I feel like it's always a hot button of sorts somewhere. You know, yeah. It may have been settled in her old neighborhood where it's very orthodox now, but I bet somewhere else that same kind of a battle is being struggled with by other people.
Yeah, no question. You know, for Catholics, I think, I mean, we have that battle within the church all the time, you know, not too far from here. There's a Catholic community that does Latin masses at least once a month, you know. So you've got, you know, from there all the way to the most, I guess you'd call it progressive. I don't know. That's not my favorite word. But yeah, you know, but just, you know, extremely
modern.
Modern. Maybe. Yeah, modern's a good word. And then if you pull, you know, the camera back even further, you know, we have, you know, tensions with other Christian churches, Christian sects, you know, that are everything from extreme fundamentalist to, you know, hey, whatever you believe, God doesn't even have to be in the mix, you know, specifically. You don't have to believe in God to come to this one, you know.
Right.
Or, you know, so those tensions exist in American society, period. Not only as Catholics, but, you know, as Americans, there's always, you know, there's lots of different things going on, I guess. But yeah. that tension is everywhere. It exists. You know, it doesn't have to be. And I don't mean to use tension as a bad word, because often it isn't. It's just that there's always this tension is the only word I can really think of that fits. You know, it's always around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, exactly, and it's been in the church always.
Yeah. Since the beginning, that's what the letters of Paul are, right?
Right.
He's like, hey, you know, let me tell you how it really is, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You guys are doing some stuff. Let me just throw this out there because, you know, this is really the right way.
Shouldn't sleep with your mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah.
It's not a thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You read those letters and even you read the laws in the first five books of the Old Testament and they've got the same things. You know, don't mess around with your stepdaughter. Don't take your neighbor's stuff. It's the same stuff we struggle with now. And it comes down. And of course, those are more flagrant violations of the things that we all kind of have built in that you really shouldn't do. But there then are the tensions within us of how do we personally relate to God and then relate to other people? And what is someone else doing that we don't think is the right way to do it? Because it's all grounded in our search for truth, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
The truth of God, what is the truth of how we live and who we are?
Yeah. Yeah, you make an excellent point, you know, all that tension that's within us. Because, you know, one of the things that leapt to mind as you were saying that was with a lot of new Catholics, you know, they can be flooded with all of these Catholic devotions, you know, people telling them, hey, you know, hey, this is a rosary, you know, and this is the Stations of the Cross and this is that, you know, and they're like, do I have to do this? You know, it's like, you know, you can just inundate them and they can feel, you know, a lot of them from the traditions that they've come from. They're feeling like, oh, these are obligations. These are things. If I don't do this, how, you know, am I, you know, I need to do as much as possible, you know, and they can really just bury themselves in this stuff, you know, with that kind of thing. But that there's some tension there too. Should I be doing this? Maybe I ought to be doing that.
Or if you're me and that happens to you and you go, well, I've tried the rosary. It's fine. Sometimes it's fine. But, you know, every day seems a bit excessive to me. And then you get people, oh, no, you've got to do it. You have to have a devotion to Our Blessed Mother and Mary, for anybody who's not Catholic, and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, I don't actually. I mean, I can, and that's fine, but I don't. And then they take it as personal rejection.
Yeah.
You know, or you're doing something wrong. And so, and that comes back down to this whole movie, because what, so, yeah, so we're assuming that you've either watched it or you're going to go watch it. So go watch it.
Yep. So here comes spoiler territory.
Yep. Yeah, because that young priest or rabbi, he comes in and he immediately starts giving them his take on how you live your faith. And it's not necessarily wrong in the basics, you know, that you, God comes first. Rebuilding the synagogue is about having a wonderful place to put the Torah and everything. And, but what he forgets is the community is what matters. Also, without a community, you don't have a synagogue. You have to have 10 people. And when he's disregarding the women, he's going, well, that's too bad that they don't have a synagogue. But, you know, then he's talking to them and going, are we sure that we know why this happened? Was it a punishment from God sent because you guys didn't live nicely enough? Who's smoking? Who's not covering your head? And it's surprising to me how the ladies responded. Most of them responded kind of in the way that I would, which is like, oh, really? I don't think so. But the one person who seemed to me to be more normal, at least certainly in relating to the main married woman who we see, who we follow, who wasn't there, she's like, I knew I didn't agree with what he was saying, but it was like I was hypnotized. I just couldn't move. He's so charismatic. And then their other friend who they've been so close to took it all to heart. And she's dressed in this very strict looking clothing. Her hair is completely underneath in the most unflattering way possible, underneath a scarf. She's now going around lecturing people about how they're doing things they shouldn't do on the Sabbath. And so all because of this charismatic guy who has the conviction to just come out and say, this is your fault.
Yeah. Am I wrong in that the one of the women who ended up wearing a headscarf and became very strict was the same woman that turned the switch on that one?
Yeah, that was Tikva.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, so I thought that was brilliant. It's so cool how the director did that and the writer or whoever, but just that little show of character, you know, she's going to go ahead and pop that on, you know, because it's practical and it's going to make the day better. And then and later on, she's like super orthodox and, you know, it was striking. It was very well done. Really love those touches. They're everywhere in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the other thing I liked about her character is, you know, and we've all seen people and perhaps ourselves gone through extreme conversions. You know, you see it among people who suddenly lost weight or started exercising or, you know, their way is the only way. And they're so excited. That's all they can talk about. Or everybody should be that way or there's something wrong with them. And she's representing that group of women who feel that that guy had a point. You know, they take it as it's a kind of an opportunity for personal conversion on their part. However, they're imposing it on everyone else. And later, when she kind of comes back to herself, she's dressing in a more colorful, fashionable way. She still has the headscarf, but it looks attractive now. She doesn't have this huge bun that it's just covering because she's just stuck her hair up any old way. It's, you know, it looks nice. She's conformed it to herself. So she can
That's
be herself
and feel
she doesn't give up the scarf. She doesn't give up that stuff, but she's understood that, you know, you just can't be so harsh because it's unlivable in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And isn't that interesting? I remember one of the things that struck me the first time I looked at one of Pope Benedict's books. It was called Salt of the Earth. It was one of those interview books. But the interviewer, I'm pretty sure it was in the introduction, asked him, you know, how many ways are there to God? And the surprising answer to me at the time, when I read it, it surprised me, was that he was Cardinal Ratzinger at the time.
The he Pope's said, Rottweiler.
Yeah, exactly. The Pope's Rottweiler said, as many ways as there are people.
Yes.
Right? And coming from what everybody tells you that the Pope's Rottweiler was, you know, that would surprise you. It surprised me. It was an eye-opener, and it helped me quite a bit to understand.
Good.
Yeah, it was just well said. But as you say that, you know, her conforming that to herself, isn't that what this is? You know, it's like, you know, they're not asking you to abandon yourself, right?
Right.
Selflessness is a virtue, but that's not what I'm saying. It's like, as many ways as there are people, to me means, especially in the Catholic Church, which is so huge, there and there are so many ways, like we mentioned before, so many devotions, so many things that we do individually, yet we come together as community when we worship. It's a really a beautiful thing, you know. So we are all individuals,
mm-hmm.
and yet we are community, and that's the unity in community, and that's like the Trinity.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's all beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the thing you see in this community, and what becomes really clear. It's funny because the men don't necessarily agree with him, but they don't really have a leader.
Hmm.
And yep. they don't know, and they don't really want to say he's wrong. But when he's saying, now you have to go home and tell your wives to put on these headscarves, they're all like, well, you know.
Yeah, bring your wives a gift. And there is something to be said about his charisma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they picked a wonderful actor to do that role.
He was so stern.
He was excellent. You know, and yeah. whenever you're presented with somebody who at the least acts as if they know exactly what they're doing, and they can be charismatic in the way they present it, it's hard to resist sometimes, you know. And he was like that, and the actor pulled that off just beautifully. When you listen to him talk, and it would be hard for you to sit there and say, no, I think you're going the wrong way. But you could, I love there was a shot where he is saying, you know, first of all, he said something like, women don't have to do all this hard stuff that we do.
Right.
And because they've already got the Torah is in them. The word of God is part of them. So they don't have to do all this stuff. You know, but they have to do this other stuff. And then he said, and how do we protect that, that inner light or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they need to wrap up and they need to cover their heads and everything. And then they went, there was a shot of the congregation of men and their expressions were just priceless. It was so good.
Oh, but see, you're not married, are you? We can tell you're not married. Everyone watching.
Oh, shoot.
Like, oh, holy moly. This is not. Oh, well, and the shots of the different men as they all go home with the head coverings for the wives and the way the wives react to it.
Oh, that was neat.
It tells you a lot about each couple because it doesn't, this movie is not about married couples in that it doesn't dwell on each couple, but it is about marriage in that it shows us enough of the different types of marriages and they're all happy in their marriages.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it's how each person's reacting. Because again, marriage is a thing where it's one uniform idea of how life should be, right? Marriage. Mm. But within that marriage, each couple is expressing themselves individually with each other and as a married couple.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. And, you know, Eddie and Zion.
Yeah, Zion.
Zion.
Zion. I loved Zion.
Yeah, they're awesome. That was the ideal. I love the portrayal of a couple like that on screen. It was great.
Yeah, because she's a strong, forceful woman, although not overbearing, really. And he's a gentle, quiet man, but he's also not. He loves his wife, and he's not henpecked at all.
Mm.
You know, he just gets his way through. He expresses himself through gentle ways. And I really loved that. You know, the thing with the fruit salad where she'd go meet him at his little spice shop and they'd have lunch together or dinner together. And it would show them in silhouette outside from outside and having a great time. And then later as a peace offering at the end when they're protesting outside of the seminary, which was another wonderful thing. you guys, if you haven't seen this movie, you've got to watch it. It's so funny. And he sends the fruit salad. She's like eating it going, I know this. This is, Sion sent this. And she just starts eating and eating. How dare he think he can do his peace offerings as she's shoveling it into her mouth, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What a great moment.
Yeah. Well, and the thing with the reason the guy is so charismatic is he has a true zeal and love for what he's talking about. It's genuine, and you cannot fake that.
Yeah.
He loves the Torah. He loves God. He loves the idea of a synagogue. But it's really clear that he doesn't have real life experience to temper it. You know, he's been teaching at a seminary, but he's not married. Because as one person says, you know, you're treating them as, you know, woman equals holy scripture. And then toward the end, it's like, you can't, there won't be a we. If you have this Bible scroll done because he's taken the money, and this is the thing where you see him start, the zeal starts to make him unbalanced because he's not stepping back and looking at anyone else's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's saying, the Bible scroll is more important than anything, and that he takes the money from the women's that they've gotten to do their balcony with, and he's going to steal it, essentially.
Yeah.
And he's coming up with reason after reason after reason. They're getting more and more ridiculous when he gets to the baby's foreskin and it's got leprosy. And I'm like, okay, really, stop, please. This is just painful. But, woman says to him at that point, if you do this Bible scroll, it will be born in sorrow. It cannot yield good because there will be no we.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well put. Okay, the moment where I realized that he had finally gone off the rails, you know, was when he said, well, let's just sign that check. Yeah. And the guy said, well, it needs two signatures. He says, well, I'll sign it with both hands. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, no, no. And then this little discussion about how the positive, how did he put it? The positive commandments outweigh the negative ones.
Yeah.
And which is basically a way of him saying, I'm making up my own rules now. You know, mm-hmm. I'm deciding now what to follow and what not to follow, which is what he is accusing everyone else of doing.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, because, yeah, it's what's livable, you know?
Yeah, and then it's just down to pride. I mean, mm-hmm. when he went and behind Zion's back went and was trying to manipulate the old sick rabbi.
Yeah.
That was the worst moment to me. I mean, the signing the check also, but that trying, because they kept saying, our rabbi will get better, even though he wasn't. He was so confused. He was calling other people by his wife's name. He just was outside of reality. And so they had a Sabbath Gentile taking care of him. And they, Zion, when he and his wife were fighting, he just went and stayed with the rabbi. Yeah. And they finally are trying to get a medical treatment and all this sort of thing. But it was funny because him, the young guy, rabbi, I guess you would call him, rabbi wannabe, going behind his back and talking to the old rabbi, I think both showed his pride and determination, but it also is what kind of pushed the old rabbi, I think, back into reality.
Hmm. I think so too. Yeah. Yeah, because it was it that same night that he woke up Zion and...
Zion
said, sorry, I keep saying it
let's
wrong.
Let's go see my wife.
Yeah.
In the hospital.
Right.
He suddenly accepted it.
That's right. Yeah. It was good stuff. Yeah. Very well done. Very well done. And at the very end, you know, skipping to the very end for just a second, the very last time we see Rabbi David is him going into another place, you know, where the guy said, will you pray with us? You know, and he says, sure, I will. And he walks in. And, you know, I was hopeful. You know, I didn't feel negative about that. I didn't feel like, oh, here we go again. I felt, you know what? I think he's learned some stuff, and he might be better at it now.
I hope. I agree. Because if we felt like he was a predator who just wanted things for his own purpose, I would have felt bad about it. Like, oh, here's a new bunch of people I can manipulate. But he really was so honest, and he was, although he was watching, he was coming from watching the wedding procession go down the street, which had his former student, one assumes it's former,
yeah,
marrying Xian and I can't remember her name now, the wife's niece.
Right, right.
And so he was watching that and then walking down the street and, can you pray with us? Gladly.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still living his faith.
Yep, yep.
And I like that it starts with a bar mitzvah and it ends with a wedding. In each case, they're processing out, and each one of those is an entry into a new life with God.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
In our case, you know, yep. Well, we don't have bar mitzvahs, but confirmation, mm-hmm. new yep. life with Christ, essentially, we would say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and in between are all the struggles that you're going through, right? How do you live?
Yeah.
What does it do to you?
Yeah. Now, what was that? You remember that niece? She was being interviewed by somebody.
Okay,
what was that about?
Having seen other Israeli movies that I have not recommended that were okay and not great, there was one about somebody who decided, who got jilted, like left at the altar almost, and then decided, I'm going to still get married on my wedding day. We've got everything arranged. God's going to send me a groom. So she spends all her time trying to find somebody to marry.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, that's a date. That's kind of like a matchmaking date, that
okay,
interview thing.
Yeah.
You see her going through interview after interview after interview like this as they try to find common ground.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. I didn't realize, you know, because later on, you know, she ended up with
adorable.
A rabbi in training, I guess.
Yes.
You know? So, but, you know, if he was interviewing her to see if she was okay to date this guy, or if that was her date, I didn't understand
that.
Yeah,
he
okay.
was the date.
But that was some funny stuff.
Yeah. Who's your favorite Bible hero?
Yeah.
You can see she's never thought about it. Samson?
Yeah.
Oh, I would say King David. Oh, you're allowing kings. Of course, King David.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Yeah, I guess that's one of the cultural things that just because I'd seen that movie, that other movie.
Yeah, it was fun. And then he asked her, you know, which of the 13 spiritual virtues would you use to describe yourself? And she says, pass.
Pass. I can't. This is the worst thing in the world.
I love it.
Well, and good. I love the, and the young couple is one of the things that's used very well to both express humor and romance also, and the conflict, because both of them are on opposite sides, essentially, you know, the family and the seminary that Rabbi David runs, but they themselves, that's how they meet. If not for that, they might never have met. And one of the early signs that they're at least similar is they both walk out with something new on that has the tag on it still.
Yeah, yeah. That was good, too. That was a very first scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For her.
And for her.
The, the first time we see him, the same thing has happened. Shall I get this tag off your clothes? Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's really great in how, this tragedy that occurred, we talk all the time about, you know, God using that kind of thing to have good. I mean, he creates good out of the bad. This whole movie kind of demonstrated that whole concept as well because of the collapsing of the synagogue, which was a tragedy. All this wonderful stuff happened, you know, including the niece meeting her husband.
Well, and they all, because they determinedly kept working through it, and there was enough love and friendship between all of them, they were able to kind of overcome all these obstacles that had been put in their way.
Yeah.
And even to the point, one of the little tiny sub themes that I just loved was the little boy with the, I know this is not right, but, you know, the little curls by his head so that, you know, he's comes from a very Orthodox family, and he hangs out with Xian at his shop all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a grandfather. And then partway through, this super Orthodox family is like, he's being watched. And so being around this guy is exposing this little boy to things that he might not otherwise see, like when he takes the oranges and pretends that they're boobs and he's dancing in the, I mean, because he's so young and innocent, and he's like, oh, don't do that. And then the guy's watching him.
Yeah.
So they separate him from the child, and it's unhappy for everyone. And then Rabbi David tries to bribe him to his side by talking them into letting the little boy visit him again. And he's like, once he learns, well, once Rabbi David told us how great you are, we realized it was okay. And he's like, oh, you know what? I'd love to have him back here, but I know he's exposed to things you wouldn't approve of.
Hmm.
So at the end, it happens on their own.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, beautiful. Which is the yep. only way it can happen, not by manipulation.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That was powerful. Really good. Yeah.
It's just kind of the microcosm of the whole dynamic of how do you, and he says at one point when he's saying, he goes, I can't keep him in a bubble the way you do. I don't think it's good for him to be here. So instead of condemning the bubble and how they're living, he just says, it's not what you want for him.
Wow.
I'm not going to get in the way of that.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's not a lot of that going on in the United States today, is
no.
there?
Oh no, my gosh. Everybody wants to burst that bubble.
Yeah, everybody wants to declare their bubble the best bubble.
Right.
We have the very best bubble.
Right.
And we hate your bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and this whole movie, it comes down to, I mean, in such a great way, so enjoyable, but it comes down to when do you see the speck in other people's eyes, but not the beam or log that's in your own?
Yeah, yeah.
And Tikva is a wonderful example of that, where she's all so strict, and finally her friend is just, you know, the friend who's kind of in between the main woman and her is like, look, I'm fine that you want to do this, but let's not pretend that I don't know about you. And she's like, well, what do you say? And she goes, oh, come on. I know that you would smoke. I know you would do these. I know you'd watch TV on Fridays. Okay. Which is Sabbath. Mm. I know you would do these other things. So that's fine if you want to change, but don't go around acting like you are always holy. Hmm. And that's kind of the talk that brings her to her senses.
Yeah. Yeah. And then later on when, you know, she walks outside and lights up a cigarette, you know, it's like her saying, you know, you're right. And that was this healing moment. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The script writer, excellent, you know, just really cool details.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I liked, the whole idea to me that was powerful, you know, I thought about it a little bit, but the, you know, that first scene when they're on their way to the bar mitzvah, you know, it was absolutely clear how much, you know, they were alive, right? It was like this, their whole faith was just alive. It was living.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they got together in the synagogue and how that was going in there. And, you know, the girl forgot the candy. I mean, it was all, everybody was just so accepting. And then
they're
that one.
Draw it out.
That reminds me of another story. Yeah. I loved it. And just the way they were doing it was just joyful, just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when the other guy came in and it was sort of, I don't know if you could call him fundamentalist, but it was more of a, you know, a strict adherence to certain things. Then that started, you know, it all fractured. It started to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really love to me, what that was saying is, that, you know, your faith needs to be alive.
Yeah.
That life, you know, it's like, you know, the reading from last week, I think the first line of the second reading was, something that I appreciated, you know, it was God saying, that he doesn't wish us to be anxious, or I should like you to be free of anxieties, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there was some points in that that I don't know if they're pertinent here or not, but that's not what God is asking us to do. You know, God doesn't want us to be fretting, you know, I need to do the rosary at 8 o'clock in the morning every morning, you know, for 7 days a week. You know, some people are called to do that and some people get nourishment from that, but you can't go down that road because you're going to be anxious forever. That's not what God is asking of us.
Yeah, because you know? It's not, and that's the argument that Protestants will make a lot of the time when they look at those things. And there are people who misdo it, you know, don't do it right, where they're like, oh, I didn't do a rosary this morning, you know, what's going to happen, or whatever devotion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, it's there, as you say, to nourish you, to help you grow, to bring you closer to God, not as a, I've got to tick this off my list. That's a superstitious way of living it almost.
Yeah, and to the extent that it helps you, to the extent that it gives you nourishment, that's the extent to which you should do it, you know? If it starts to cause you stress, that's not what it's there for.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's kind of important to remember with Lent coming up in a few weeks, where we, you know, you do this and it's 40 days worth of deprivation or adding things on, hopefully both. And those things you kind of have to muscle through a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But you can see the end in sight.
Yeah. And that's a different kind of thing, you know, Lent. Yeah. I love Lent. Don't get me started. No,
I hear that. I still don't understand. I enter each year with, I say that I love
Lent because of what I've gotten out of it.
Right.
You know, every time it's like a renewal. If you eliminate something from your life, what it does is it teaches you what's important about that or what's not important about that.
Right.
And it's something that, you know, I've talked to non-Christians before and have talked to them about, you know, if they're talking to me about stress or something like that, you know, it's something that some non-Christian people have taken up, by the way. It's like, you know, let's give this up, you know, for a while. And, you know, there's something that I don't know how much it's caught on, but it was popular for a little while called the Internet Sabbath. Which is kind of a mini Lent, which is, you know, families saying, okay, on this day every week, everybody's going to put their phones in this basket, and we're not going to turn them on, you know, even if they're non-religious, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And what that does is it teaches you, well, what's important about that phone?
Yeah.
You know, not only you have the family unity and the family togetherness and everyone paying attention to each other, which is fantastic, but it also teaches you, well, what are you missing about that phone? And is this thing that you're missing important? And if it's not important, then let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how often is it that you want it? Because that's the sign of, oh, I'm unnecessarily dependent on all this.
Yeah, yeah. And to me, that's what Lent is. You know, Lent, it lasts for 40 days. You know, and there's, you know, we've talked about it before, but there's something about 40 days, you know, habit building and all these things, you know, where, you know, you give up something for 40 days. You've broken that habit and you get to decide again whether or not to take it back up. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's something that is good for you, you do it. If not, you let it go. But you're able to let it go after 40 days.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and that internal wrestling with whatever it is that you've given up is very important. And I've done that throughout, like, you know, thanks to Lent probably, identified things at other times of the year where I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to dedicate this effort to you, God.
Yeah.
Help me with this. I'm going to not do this particular thing or try to avoid this thing or whatever. And sometimes I kind of get control of it. Sometimes I just go, nope, I'm not going back to that. I've tried it again and it's not satisfying. There's no point in it.
Yeah.
And yes, I never approach Lent going, Lent, I love Lent, but I do agree with you that by the end of every Lent, I have gained something invaluable. And so by the end of Lent, I'm very happy with it. It's just, I'm never one of those people. It's like, oh, good, a pool of
hooray, water. Hooray, the desert. We love the desert.
Nothing like the desert. No water, no food, a lot of sand blowing in my eyes. It's hot.
Mm. Oh, shoot. Yeah.
But cool. You do learn a lot about yourself there because things have been taken away from you.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, I guess the modern way of, you could say it is, it's like a cleanse.
You know, absolutely it is, yeah.
Cleanse.
Yeah, and that's, I agree.
Just a habitual yearly cleanse. Well, the other thing that this movie made me stop and think about, especially the second time through, was how valuable community is. And we've said it before, but even in a big church like I go to, I still sit in the same area and we see all the same people, even if we don't know their names. Mm-hmm. When you're doing the sign of peace, you're all giving each other a different kind of smile than you give to the people you don't know. And it made me think about, what if something like that happened at my church? What if part of the roof fell in and we had to scatter to meet somewhere else?
Mm.
Or, you know, our minister, and at the same time, our pastor was, you know, hurt and whatever. And so, like, I'm having to go to Christ the King or St. Patrick's or whatever else near me. And I'm just like, oh, that would just be brutal. Because I'm not comfortable with it. It's not my community. I don't know it, even though the liturgy is the same, how they, that community, each one expresses themselves is different.
Yeah. Yeah. I
mean, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's, it's funny you say that, because it made me think about where I sit and uh-huh. It is the same way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sitting in a different place in church is kind of like going to a different church almost.
Yeah. Oh, yes, when it's a friend of the church is reserved where I sit, happens fairly frequently for this retreat group or something mm-hmm. like that. And I'm like, all of us are like crammed in together going, oh, this is not my usual spot.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny. Communities in the community.
Yep. But,
yep, it really is that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, yeah, I sit in the same place every single time.
Yeah, I have my spot.
Yep. Excellent, excellent. What a wonderful movie.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah, is there anything else you'd like to say about it?
No, that's pretty much it.
Well, wonderful. So, yeah, let's see. So, have they done anything else? So, the director is, I read that article that you sent me. So, they were married, but now they're divorced. But the director mm-hmm. was Emil Ben-Shimon, and the writer was Shlomit Nehama.
Ah.
But I'm just curious. Clicking here on the old IMDb, the director has done some TV stuff before this movie was all, and it doesn't have anything after that.
And I think I saw that the actors had been in various TV things too.
Okay. You know. I really loved the actors.
You know, they were great. They thought.
Everybody was just great.
Yeah.
Yep. And this is the only movie that was written by her in IMDb anyway. So, but yeah. Yeah, because I would definitely search them out if they had done more stuff.
Yeah, I was glad it was a hit, so that maybe they can do something else, whether together or individually. Because I thought the script was spot on and the directing was very good.
Yeah,
you know, really well done. So.
I agree with you.
Yeah. It's funny how well this comedy holds on to all these basic threads of things that are so important. You know, sometimes the best points are made lightly.
Yeah I agree with you. That's cool. It's a lot different than religious movies that just hit you over the head with stuff, you know.
Well, or even the ones that are they're not necessarily hitting you over the head, but they're just serious, so like Of Gods and Men, that kind of thing, where you're just going, oh my goodness, I'm left devastated at the end. And it's a beautiful movie, well done. I liked it. But this is, and of course, this is talking about community just like that was in different ways, though.
That's right. You're right. You're right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not everything needs to end up with walking out in the snow.
Please, yeah, no.
I'm with you.
Well, and yeah, there's a time for both things. Yep. You know?
Agreed.
Obviously.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love this. Yeah. This movie's gentle in so many ways. You use that word about Zion.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved it. This is a keeper.
Yeah.
Another one for the pool room.
For the pool room. Yeah. Right. I felt so lucky that the library had, I think they had several copies.
I got mine on Amazon, rented it.
Oh, okay.
I rented it for 48 hours. They give you.
Okay. Got it.
Yep. But it's available there. So if you're looking for it, that's where I got mine. Mm-hmm. But I will definitely be ordering a copy for my shelf, so I'll have it.
Yeah, our library had 4 or 5 copies. And when I first was looking for it, 4 of them were checked out. So that made me feel good about it. Other people were watching. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, wonderful. Right. Wonderful, wonderful. So where are we headed next? Let me find out.
Far away.
Far, far away.
The red planet.
Yes. Not Dune. For those of you thinking it's Dune, it's not Dune. It's Mars.
Yes.
Yes, Mars. We're going to talk about The Martian Chronicles by Ray Bradbury.
Talk about a classic.
Yay. Oh, that'll be fun.
Oh, yes. I love it so much.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, cool. Okay.
All right.
I guess that's it. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.